Welcome to Scarlet Tavern. Grab a drink, take a seat, and let's begin. In part two, we're not just chasing clues. We're trying to get inside the mind of the most elusive ghost in crime history. What drives a person to taunt the police, send cryptic puzzles, and then vanish into thin air? Was it ego, control, or something even darker? Today, we're piecing together a psychological profile, exploring his motives, his endgame, and the parade of suspects, from the plausible to the downright bizarre. Grab your magnifying glass and tinfoil hat. This hunt is about to get wild. This is Scarlet Tavern. All right, part two.
Electric Boogaloo.
The hunt for a ghost. So we'll just get right into it. By now, the Zodiac has cemented himself as not only a ruthless killer, but also a master manipulator of the media and law enforcement. His murders had sparked panic and confusion, but it was his letters that revealed a darker, more insidious intent, the desire to be feared, respected, and untouchable. The Zodiac's first letters were shocking enough, but they were only the beginning of a campaign of taunts that would span years. With each new correspondence, he toyed with investigators, pushing them to their limits and laughing at their inability to catch him. Tonight, we'll explore how the Zodiac's letters, phone calls, and ciphers were all part of a twisted game, one where the rules were his alone to decide. It was August 4th, 1969, just a few days after his initial letters were published in the San Francisco Chronicle, Vallejo Times Herald, and San Francisco Examiner. The Zodiac sent a follow-up letter to the San Francisco Examiner, this time marking a significant change in tone and presentation. The letter began with an introduction that would forever etch his name into infamy. Dear Editor, this is the Zodiac speaking. This was the first time he referred to himself as Zodiac, adopting the moniker that would define him for the rest of his life. With a simple phrase, he created a persona that was larger than life. A name that struck fear into the hearts of everyone who read it. He was no longer an anonymous killer. He was a self-styled villain, an entity with a brand and an identity all his own. In this letter, he reiterated details of his crimes and expressed frustrations that the police had failed to catch him. He also mocked the media, describing them as mere pawns in his game, saying, "I like killing people because it's so much fun. It's more fun than killing wild game in the forest because man is the most dangerous animal of all."
Well, he ain't wrong.
This was no ordinary killer. The Zodiac was taunting the very people who were trying to hunt him down, painting himself as a hunter of men, someone who saw himself as superior both intellectually and morally to his pursuers. But the Zodiac didn't limit himself to letters alone. After the brutal attack on Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Shepherd at Lake Berryessa on September 27, 1969, the Zodiac made a chilling phone call to the Napa County Sheriff's Office. The call, made from a payphone just blocks from the police department, was brief, cold, and calculated. He began with the following statement: "I want to report a murder. No, a double murder. They are 2 miles north of park headquarters. They were in a white Volkswagen Karmann Ghia." His voice was described as calm and unhurried, as if he were simply reporting a car accident rather than confessing to a grisly attack. He provided precise details of the crime, then hung up without saying another word. Officers scrambled to the location he described, but by the time they arrived, it was too late. Cecilia Shepherd was fatally wounded, and though Brian Hartnell survived, his life was forever scarred by the horror that day. This phone call was significant for a few reasons. First, it demonstrated that the Zodiac was willing to interact with law enforcement directly, placing himself at a greater risk of being traced or recognized. It also showed his willingness to correct or amend his own statements, as if his true focus was on the details and his own reputation, not just on instilling fear. Yet despite the increased risk, the Zodiac remained untouchable. He had become a phantom, able to slip in and out of public spaces unnoticed. The authorities were chasing a ghost who knew exactly how to manipulate their every move. The Zodiac's next letter, sent just 2 weeks after the attack at Lake Berryessa, proved that he was more than just a killer. He was a performer, someone who wanted the world to see and acknowledge his presence. On October 13th, 1969, the San Francisco Chronicle received a letter containing a piece of Paul Stein's bloodstained shirt, removed by the Zodiac after he had shot the cab driver in the head in the affluent neighborhood of Presidio Heights. The inclusion of Stein's shirt was the ultimate proof of his involvement. It wasn't just a confession, it was a taunt, a dare for the police to try to catch him. The letter read, "This is the Zodiac speaking. I am the murderer of the taxi driver over by Washington Street and Maple Street last night. To prove this, here is a piece of his shirt." The letter continued with an even more sinister threat. "School children make nice targets. I think I shall wipe out a school bus this morning. Just shoot out the front tire and pick off the kiddies as they come bouncing out." The statement sent shockwaves through the Bay Area. Parents kept their children home from school, and police were stationed at bus stops along bus routes hoping to prevent a tragedy. The Zodiac, it seemed, had moved beyond just killing for pleasure. He was actively seeking to incite widespread panic, turning his murders campaign into a form of psychological warfare. The Zodiac's next move was more personal. On October 27, 1970, he sent a Halloween card to San Francisco Chronicle reporter Paul Avery. Avery had been covering the case extensively, and it appeared that the Zodiac had taken personal interest in the journalist. The card featured images of skeletons and Halloween-themed phrases like, "From your secret pal," and "Peekaboo, you are doomed." Written across the front of the card was the number 14, suggesting the Zodiac was claiming 14 victims by that time. Inside, the Zodiac scrawled the words, "I feel it in my bones. You wake to know my name, so I'll clue you in." The Halloween card wasn't just a threat. It was an acknowledgement of the cat-and-mouse game the Zodiac was playing with Avery and the media. He was daring Avery to figure out his identity, knowing full well that Avery and the police had no idea who he really was. His personal attack deeply rattled Avery, who began carrying a gun and looking over his shoulder. The Chronicle published a front-page story about the Halloween card, and Avery's colleagues wore "I am not Paul Avery" buttons as a dark joke.
That is fucked up.
The Zodiac reveled in this attention. He had successfully turned his campaign of terror into a performance piece, and his audience was captivated by every word, every threat, and every symbol.
Jesus Christ. Was Paul Avery just not really well-liked at the Chronicle?
He was a very well-known reporter at the time. In November 1969, the Zodiac escalated his threats with the infamous bus bomb letter, sent into the San Francisco Chronicle. In this letter, he detailed a plan to build a bomb, use it to blow up a school bus. He even included a hand-drawn diagram of the device, complete with switches, wires, and a description of how it would detonate. Once again, the Zodiac's threat paralyzed the region. Police were dispatched to escort school buses, parents pulled their children out of school, and the media plastered the Zodiac's diagram on the front page. Yet despite the panic, no bus bomb ever materialized. The Zodiac's real weapon wasn't explosives, it was fear, and he wielded it masterfully. The police were left feeling helpless, outmatched, and humiliated. Each time they responded, the Zodiac seemed to anticipate their moves, using his letters and threats to stay one step ahead. The police couldn't catch him, and worse, they couldn't stop him from broadcasting his sadistic messages. The Zodiac's letters and ciphers were more than just communications. They were traps designed to confound, mislead, and frustrate those who hunted him. Every word, every symbol, every threat was carefully chosen to maximize his impact. His ciphers, particularly the infamous 340 character cipher, which took over 50 years to solve, were symbols of his intellectual prowess and a testament to his need to feel superior to everyone around him. He wasn't content with simply being a killer. He wanted to be seen as an unsolvable riddle, a living puzzle that no one could put together. By the time the letter ceased in 1974, the Zodiac had done more than elude capture. He had left a legacy of fear, confusion, and mystery that persists to this day. Even now, as we delve into his words and deeds, we're playing his game. trying to understand, trying to decode, trying to catch a ghost. As we move further into this episode, we'll explore the police's efforts to profile this killer, the suspects who emerged, and the psychological strategies used to outwit a man who seemed to always be one step ahead. This is the story of the Zodiac's taunts and the police's relentless and ultimately fruitless pursuit of an invisible enemy.
I can imagine this was probably, this was, even if today with everything, how far forensic psychology has come, I would imagine it would probably be the challenge of a lifetime to try and build something on him. Because on one hand, many of the attributes seem so like blatantly clear: loner, antisocial, wants to feel superior. But at the same time, there's just elements that just don't make sense to me. You know, like the what always got me with this was this the abruptness he stopped.
Yep. So, let's go into a psychological profile. Let's get into the head of the Zodiac.
I would prefer not to.
I kind of wouldn't mind.
I've done this.
Interview this guy.
I've done this. To catch a killer like the Zodiac, investigators knew they had to do more than just follow the physical evidence. The killer was careful, cunning, and often left few clues at the scene of his crimes. Traditional investigative methods, interviews, canvassing neighborhoods, gathering physical evidence had all come up short. So police turned to something new: psychological profiling. They needed to understand the mind behind the murders, the thought that drove this man to kill, and the motivations behind his cryptic letters. The Zodiac was more than just a violent criminal. He was a manipulator, someone who saw control through his words and actions. He was a puzzle, not just in the literal sense of his ciphers, but also in the way he presented himself, a complex enigma that required careful analysis. Tonight, we step into the mind of the Zodiac Killer, exploring the psychological profile developed by law enforcement and the many theories that have emerged over the years. What kind of person was capable of such calculated brutality? What motivated him to taunt the police and the media? And why did he suddenly disappear, leaving a trail of unanswered questions in his wake? One of the first steps in building a psychological profile was understanding the Zodiac's behavior at the crime scenes. Each attack was marked by a disturbing blend of meticulous planning and cold-blooded execution. He carefully selected isolated locations, lovers' lanes, and secluded park areas where he knew he would have the upper hand. But unlike other serial killers who stalk and study their victims for days or weeks, the Zodiac seemed to choose his targets at random. His victims had no apparent connection to one another, and the circumstances of each murder varied greatly. The randomness suggested the Zodiac wasn't driven by the typical impulses of lust or rage that fuel other killers. Instead, his motivation appeared to be power and control. He wanted to instill fear not just in his victims, but in the broader public. According to the FBI's BAU, the Behavioral Analysis Unit, the Zodiac's choice of isolated locations and his apparent lack of specific victim profile suggested he was an opportunistic killer. His focus wasn't on who he killed, but in the act itself. The planning, the stalking, the moment of attack, and the aftermath. The killings were a means to an end, with the real payoff coming from the letters and ciphers that followed. The Zodiac's letters also offered insight into his personality. The BAU and criminal profilers noted several key traits that emerged from his writings. Grandiosity and narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
The Zodiac saw himself as superior to those who pursued him. He taunted the police for their inability to catch him, calling them slow and fools. He positioned himself as an untouchable figure, someone beyond the reach of law enforcement. This grandiosity was a hallmark of narcissistic personality disorder, a condition characterized by a sense of superiority, a need for admiration, and a lack of empathy. The desire for control. The Zodiac's desire to control extended beyond his victims and into the realm of public perception. His letters were meticulously crafted, each word chosen to convey a sense of power. He dictated what information the police and media could have, when they could have it, and what they should do with it. The Zodiac's references to collecting slaves for the afterlife hinted at a delusional belief system. but it also underscored his obsession with power and control. Attention-seeking behavior. Unlike other killers who preferred to remain in the shadows, the Zodiac wanted to be seen and heard. He craved the spotlight, sending letters directly to newspapers and including details that only the killer would know. He used his ciphers and threats to keep himself in the news, ensuring that his name was never far from the public's mind. His need for attention suggested a deep-rooted insecurity masked by his bravado, intellectual superiority, and sadism. The Zodiac clearly saw himself as an intellectual. He referred to his crimes as a game and challenged the public to solve his ciphers. The complexity of his puzzles and the cryptic nature of his language indicated a man who valued intelligence and wanted others to see him as brilliant and cunning. But his intellect was paired with sadism. He derived pleasure not just from killing, but from knowing that his words would inflict fear, confusion, and helplessness on those trying to stop him.
This, you know, I keep reading this and I always keep reanalyzing everything. I would not be surprised, because I think there's a middle ground between what you said, because you think the Zodiac may have been law enforcement of some kind. But I think there may have, he may not have been law enforcement in the sense like he was a cop, but he may have worked for the state. He needed something, because part of this is he knew where these locations were because the stalking, he knows the hunt. He knows where to go because, again, there's probably countless back roads, quote unquote, you know, deserted park areas where lovers go to.
But yeah, but that doesn't have anything to do with his job. That he could just be from there.
He could be. You're right. No, he could be.
I think it's more he's from
there. But you pointed out a good. You're right. He is from there. But I think you actually hit it when you said he knew. He knew the three jurisdictions were going to clash, and he knew that they were going to start bumbling around like the Keystone Cops. How would he know that? I'm not sure I agree he's law enforcement, but if he worked something in, say, for the state where he is around all these different municipality in these agencies and knows how they work, but not to the point, I mean, not law enforcement inside, but just enough that he knows, hey, these guys are not going to work well together. Why? Because I work with them. I work in these areas, and they don't work well with each other. So it's like it hints that he has some inside knowledge on how this stuff works, enough that he can manipulate them, but not totally that he can obviously, you know, get away completely scot-free.
Well, he would have if he wouldn't have talked to them. Yeah, think about it. This is why I think he's law enforcement, because he changes his MO in every single kill. Even the two handgun kills are two different handguns. One's a 45, one's a 9mm. Then one's a knife. So literally the only reason that they knew that these were connected is because of his phone calls and his letters. If he would have just disappeared, nobody would have been able to connect him. They wouldn't have even known it was a serial killer.
And there was the first case and the last one, both were 9mm. The cab driver was a 9mm, and the first case was a 9mm.
Yeah. So you have a 9mm, a 45, and then knives.
But the only reason, the only thing is, I guess what it strikes me as is why I say not law enforcement is because everything about some of his, the more things that stick out of his profile is that it strikes me as somebody who is very gifted but not utilized. He's very much in a not leadership management positions. He is a, I think you said like a data analyst or somebody
who is a beat cop that can't make his way up because he's not liked. You got to understand, you guys have never done civilian law enforcement. So when in military police and in the military, you gain rank as soon as you pass a test. You get rank as long as there's slots open. In civilian law enforcement, it's not like that. It's a popularity contest. I will say my dad did 20 years in law enforcement and never even got the rank of corporal because he wasn't liked. He passed the sergeant exam 4 times, aced it, and they threw it out because they didn't like him. So it's a popularity contest, especially in small departments. So this guy could just be a B cop that he tried to take a detective's exam because he is smart, and he probably aced the detective's exam, but because people didn't like him because he was a loner, then they were like, yeah, no, we're not going to take you.
Those are very good points. In that case, maybe he was California Highway Patrol. That would be the only cop I can think of that would have the ability to know about all those jurisdictions, know all the areas.
No.
Why not? I mean,
any cop has basic knowledge of jurisdiction areas.
That's true, but...
I knew where jurisdictions were. I knew how each department around me.
I just get the feeling this guy is whatever he does, he moves around. That's my gut feeling.
I don't think so. I think he was law enforcement inside one of these departments, that's why he taunts them so much and calls them so stupid, because they are he's right under their nose.
I don't think he's Sam from Cisco PD. I don't think he's State Patrol either.
Nope. I think he's in a very small one, like Napa.
Yep. I think he's Napa. A Napa cop.
Because
he is
right under their noses the entire time, and I can almost guarantee he worked on his own investigation.
Maybe.
Which is why he was always a step ahead. You gotta think about this. How is he always a step ahead?
Unless he's meticulously planned it far out.
He's not a planner. Think about it. None of the kills are planned. They're crimes of opportunity. They were just the first people to show up. He blocked them. Remember, with the cars, he pulled up next to them, then pulled away, then pulled behind them. He didn't know these people were going to be there. He didn't stalk them. Even the people that lived said they never had anybody that followed them for weeks. There was nothing odd. This just happened. So the only reason he would be one step ahead is because he's on the inside.
Listening to, hey, they're looking here, so I'm going to go do this over here.
So.
Oh, these guys are getting a little close. Okay, let me go do this over here.
So the Zodiac's letters provided more than just confessions and threats. They were windows into his psyche. His handwriting, tone, and language choices were all analyzed by experts, leading to several key insights. The handwriting analysis. Forensic document examiners studied the Zodiac's handwriting, noting the deliberate style of his block letter printing. The precise nature of his penmanship suggested that he was detail-oriented and took great care in crafting his communications. The lack of cursive or personal flourishes indicated that he might have been trying to disguise his true handwriting style, which could imply prior experience with law enforcement or knowledge of how forensic investigations works. You gotta think, back in the day, and this time there were handwriting reports. So his handwriting analysis would be on file.
Or at least it would be recognizable.
That one of the duty sergeant would be able to go, I know who writes this, because remember, at that time, the duty sergeant has to review every single thing that's turned in. And they would know, okay, this is so-and-so. This is Mike's handwriting. I know this handwriting. That desk sergeant would know.
But this also brings another thing, is forensic investigations work. Who says that he wasn't up and coming in forensics?
Because it wasn't that big back then. You didn't really have that many forensic investigators back then.
I believe, and I would like to be double-checked on this, but I believe a handwriting analysis, or at least spelling analysis, wasn't really like pioneered until they got to the Unabomber. Because I know they use that a lot. They use his manifesto to help track him down of who he was. But
technically, handwriting analysis has been around for 400 years.
1895.
Well, even in 1622. Camillo Baldi was the first person that did practical observations. So it's been around for a very long time.
I'm thinking of something, another type of forensics they used at the Unabomber. I'm sorry. Yeah, right. You know, you're right. Handwriting has been around for a while.
Did handwriting analysis for Jack the Ripper.
Yep, that is true. They did do that.
So graphology is what handwriting analysis is actually called.
Wouldn't it be crazy if actually the Zodiac was an FBI agent? I mean, he would be law enforcement. He would have tabs on what's going on, and he definitely would have the, I would say, the freedom to do it. FBI back then was pretty, I don't want to say decentralized, but the agents could do a lot more. There wasn't as much oversight of what they were doing back then, as opposed to some of the local municipality were doing.
So, his use of language and tone. The Zodiac's letters oscillated between arrogance and cold detachment. He described his killings as if they were mundane events, showing no remorse or empathy. This clinical, emotionless tone is often associated with psychopathy, a condition marked by a lack of empathy and a propensity for manipulative and antisocial behavior. At the same time, the Zodiac's use of phrases like collecting slaves and the most dangerous game indicated a possible fascination with literature and mythology, suggesting it was well-read or fancied himself an intellectual. Symbolism and delusions of grandeur. The Zodiac symbol, the crosshair inside a circle, was analyzed as a representation of his views of himself as a hunter. He saw himself as the ultimate predator, preying on the weak and helpless. The use of ciphers, where he hinted at possessing some secret knowledge, further reinforced his need to evaluate himself above others. The symbolism, combined with his references to collecting slaves for an afterlife, hinted at a disturbed belief system, possibly rooted in delusional thinking or fantasy.
Honestly, I can't help but wonder if this whole what they have is all just BS. I mean, if he's as smart as they're saying he are, which all evidence suggests that he might be, how do we know that this whole persona that he showed was just made up?
We don't know. And then there's like the symbolism and stuff like that. Some people look at the way he writes the crosshair as, like, with his delusions of grandeur, like he copied the Templar symbol because it was typically red and white, and it fits. So some people believe, if you go way out there, some people believe that he was part of the Knights Templar and all of that kind of stuff. So given his behavior, the Zodiac's motivations are still the subject of intense debate among psychologists and criminologists. Some of the most prominent theories include thrill-seeking and the desire for fame. The Zodiac might have been primarily motivated by the thrill of killing and the attention that followed. He used his crimes as a way to insert himself into the public consciousness, manipulating the media and police like pawns on a chessboard. His ciphers, letters, and phone calls were all part of a calculated strategy to ensure his notoriety. Power and control. The Zodiac's obsession with power extended to every aspect of his life. He needed to be in control of how he was perceived and how the investigation unfolded. By choosing random victims and killing in different locations, he maintained the upper hand, making it nearly impossible for law enforcement to establish a predictable pattern. This theory posits that the Zodiac's real pleasure came not from the killing themselves, but from the sense of dominance he felt over the entire state of California, and mental illness or delusional beliefs. Some experts believe that the Zodiac may have been suffering from a severe mental illness, possibly schizophrenia or a delusional disorder. His references to collecting slaves for an afterlife, his bizarre symbolism, and the nonsensical nature of some of his letters suggest a possible break from reality. This theory explains his erratic behavior and why his motivation seems so difficult to pin down. In the end, despite their best efforts, the FBI and local law enforcement were never able to definitively catch the Zodiac. The psychological profile they developed pointed to a man in his late 20s to early 30s at the time of the murders, likely with an above-average intelligence and a profession or background that gave him free time and mobility, possibly a night shift worker or someone in a technical field. The Zodiac's knowledge of ciphers and his calm, calculated demeanor suggested a person with military experience or someone who had been exposed to military environments where cryptography and radio operations were taught. But the profile was just that, a theory, not a solution. No suspect ever fit perfectly, and the Zodiac remains a faceless figure hidden behind the layers of his letters and the fear he sowed. Understanding the Zodiac psychology is key to unraveling the mystery of why he killed and why he chose to stop. As we move forward, we'll dive into the suspects that emerged over the years and how each fit or didn't fit the profile. The hunt for the Zodiac is far from over, and the closer we get to understanding his mind, the more we realize just how elusive he truly was. Over the years, the search for the Zodiac Killer has yielded hundreds of suspects, each with their own unique connection to the case. But while many were questioned, investigated, and scrutinized, none were ever conclusively tied to the murders. Tonight, we're going to focus on the prime suspects, the ones who, for a time, seemed to be the most likely candidates for the identity of the Zodiac. These men were investigated, pursued, and often hounded by both law enforcement and amateur sleuths. Some were eliminated through solid evidence, while others remained clouded in doubt and suspicion. Let's begin with a man who, for decades, stood at the top of the suspect list, Arthur Lee Allen. Arthur Lee Allen was a troubled man with a criminal record, and from the moment his name was first mentioned to police in 1971, he became the focal point of the investigation. Allen was a convicted child molester and former elementary school teacher with a history of erratic and disturbing behavior. His own friends and family described him as unstable, and capable of violence. But it wasn't just his criminal background that made him a suspect. It was the circumstantial evidence that seemed to point directly at him. Allen first came to the attention of police when an old friend, Don Chaney, informed authorities that Allen had confided in him about a plan to commit random murders and taunt the police with cryptic letters. This conversation, Chaney claimed, took place in 1968 before the Zodiac's first confirmed killing. According to Chaney, Allen also expressed a desire to call himself the Zodiac and spoke at length about killing couples in remote areas, targeting school children, using a flashlight attached to a gun for nighttime shootings. Chaney's statement was enough to bring Allen under scrutiny, but it was the subsequent evidence that made him a prime suspect. Witnesses from the Paul Stein murder described the suspects as a heavyset man with a crew-cut hairstyle, traits that matched Allen's appearance at the time. Though eyewitnesses' descriptions are notoriously unreliable, the resemblance was strong enough to warrant further investigation. During a 1971 police search of Allen's home, investigators discovered a Zodiac brand wristwatch. The watch featured the same crosshair symbol that the Zodiac used in his signature. While the presence of the watch was not definitive evidence, it was a strange and unsettling coincidence. When questioned by police, Allen displayed a disturbing nonchalance. He admitted that he had a fascination with cryptography and codes, had an affinity for violent literature, and owned guns that matched the type of weapons used in the Zodiac killings. However, he maintained his innocence and denied any involvement in the murders. Despite these troubling clues, no physical evidence ever tied Allen to the Zodiac. His fingerprints did not match those found on the Zodiac letters. His handwriting did not match the killer's distinctive style. And there was no DNA evidence to link him to the crimes. In 1991, another search of Allen's home yielded no new evidence, and he died in 1992, still a suspect, but never charged.
I think Don Chaney got pissed off at Allen, probably made that up to do that. I mean, granted, I have no doubt that Arthur Allen was probably a disturbed individual in the art and he's a fucking child molester, so, you know, fuck him. But the state, I don't know, like you said, it's just Zodiac brand watch wasn't, I don't know how common or uncommon it was.
Well, number one, they're still in existence. They've been around since the 1800s.
So it's not.
That is an 18 karat gold Zodiac watch.
Ooh, that looks nice.
Zodiac watches are some of the best watches in the world.
So it's not entirely impossible for more than one person.
They're popular.
While and witness the a heavyset man with a crew cut. This is the 1960s. That's still very much in style. You don't sell watches anymore. Stop trying to tempt us with watches. The description does it. It's probably half of, probably a good chunk of California matches that. And like I said, he's probably already a disturbed individual, so his behavior is already going to be not normal. So I think his friend wanted to get rid of Mr. Allen for one reason.
Now the price obviously changes now, but you can see the price of a Zodiac now. About $5,000.
That's expensive. Yeah.
Now that's the 18 karat gold plated, but Zodiac is still around to this day. They've been around since the 1800s.
Yeah.
They are a very popular watch. So, I mean, it could be that the real killer had a Zodiac too, and that's where he got it from. So he liked the way it looked.
Yeah.
Zodiac is well known for making dive watches as well. And you can see on the bevel here. This is the bevel.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
You have the Zodiac symbol there as well, and then you have it on the face of the watch. So it's all over the place. So
I mean, I can definitely see why Arthur Allen would be a suspect. This is a solid suspect here, but ultimately I don't see him being the Zodiac. And him being nonchalant and whatever, he probably doesn't like cops anyway, because, oh, hey, wait, he's a criminal.
Yeah.
And he's already got a history of being disturbed and violent, so I bet his friend saw an opportunity to get rid of the asshole that nobody liked.
Yeah. Another prominent suspect was Rick Marshall, a projectionist who worked in movie theaters across the Bay Area. Marshall was a peculiar man with a passion for films, codes, and cryptography. He also bore a physical resemblance to the Zodiac's descriptions and owned a typewriter similar to the one believed to have been used to type the Zodiac letters. Marshall first came under suspicion when investigators discovered that one of the Zodiac's letters was written on a piece of paper that bore a rare watermark, one typically found only in movie theaters. This, combined with Marshall's background and erratic behavior, piqued investigators' interest. Marshall also used a peculiar form of language and symbols in his personal writings, which some experts believe bore similarities to Zodiac ciphers. However, despite these leads, police were never able to definitively connect Marshall to the murders. Handwriting analysis was inconclusive, and no other physical evidence was found linking him to the crimes. Marshall was known to have an obsessive nature, particularly when it came to films and codes, and he lived alone, which fueled speculation that he could have been the Zodiac. Yet, like Allen, he was ultimately cleared due to a lack of concrete evidence.
I don't know.
Lawrence Kane was another strong suspect in the Zodiac case. Kane, a former U.S. Navy radioman and merchant marine, had a history of mental illness and a violent behavior following a severe brain injury sustained in a car accident in 1962. The injury reportedly left him impulsive and with diminished self-control. Kane's name was first brought up in connection with the disappearance of Donna Lass, a nurse who vanished in 1970, and was believed by some to have been a Zodiac victim. Kane was known to frequent the area where Lass worked, and circumstantial evidence linked him to the disappearance. One of the most compelling pieces of evidence against Kane came from Kathleen Johns, a woman who survived an encounter with the Zodiac in 1970. Johns claims that she was abducted by the Zodiac, who forced her to drive for hours before she managed to escape. When shown a picture of Lawrence Kane, Johns identified him as her abductor, a chilling connection that brought Kane into the spotlight. Kane's handwriting and appearance also bore some resemblance to the Zodiac, and he had a history of using aliases and fake identities, making him difficult to track. However, as with the other suspects, no physical evidence linked Kane to the crimes. He was never charged, and his potential connection to the Zodiac remains speculative.
The
moving around would work. Also, him leaving, like it abruptly stopping. He was a merchant marine, which means he's on cargo ships.
Yeah.
He just disappears.
Eventually, assuming he went back to San Francisco.
Jack Terrence became a suspect when his stepson, Dennis Kaufman, came forward with evidence he believed tied Terrence to the Zodiac murders. Kaufman presented police with what he claimed was the Zodiac's hood, a bloodstained knife, and a series of letters written by Terrence that he argued match the Zodiac's handwriting. Kaufman also claimed that Terrence had confessed to being the Zodiac before his death in 2006, but his allegations were met with skepticism. Forensic testing on the items Kaufman provided did not conclusively link Terrence to the Zodiac, and his handwriting did not match known samples from the Zodiac letters. Nevertheless, the case remains open, and some believe Terrence's involvement cannot be ruled out entirely.
Sounds like he just wanted to get back at his stepdad, or profit off of his stepdad's death or something.
Here is one of the craziest ones.
What? Seriously?
Perhaps the most surprising suspect to emerge was Ted Kaczynski, better known as the Unabomber. Kaczynski's reign of terror spanned decades, and his penchant for writing manifestos and taunting the FBI with letters drew comparisons to the Zodiac. He also lived in Northern California during the time of the Zodiac murders, leading some to speculate that he could have been involved. However, Kaczynski's crimes were motivated by his anti-technology and ideology, which did not align with the Zodiac's apparent thrill-seeking motives. While some have suggested that the Zodiac may have evolved into the Unabomber, law enforcement agencies have found no concrete evidence linking Kaczynski to the Zodiac's murders.
Isn't Ted Kaczynski still alive in prison?
Yes.
So, anyone ever, you think they ever asked him?
Most likely.
They probably did.
He's
not alive. He died last year.
Oh.
He died June 10th.
Oh, I guess I can't ask him.
So, at 81 years old.
I mean, honestly, I'm sure if they thought of it, they would have asked him. I mean,
they probably did, and
he wasn't him.
It wasn't him
because he was serving life without parole for the Unabomber.
And he got cancer.
Yeah,
so that's what he died from, was cancer.
Yeah.
So fuck him, but
yeah,
he deserved it.
But
I hope it was painful.
Yeah, but he didn't confess to them, so I think it kind of tells you that he didn't do it.
Yeah. But that is one of the biggest ones. There is another one that we don't talk about in here. We're about to go over two more ones. But there's another one that some wacko people believe that this was Jack the Ripper.
Oh, God. Yeah. Seriously?
That is one of the speculations, that this was Jack the Ripper, just super old.
He would be almost dead, if not already.
Yeah, that's why it said it's a whacked out theory. Bruce Davis, a member of the Manson family, was also considered a suspect due to his proximity to the Zodiac's crimes and his known history of violence. However, Davis was already incarcerated during some of the Zodiac's correspondences, eliminating him as a viable suspect. Richard Gadkowski, a journalist who worked for an underground newspaper in San Francisco, was also scrutinized. Some researchers believe that Gadkowski's anti-establishment rhetoric and presence in the Bay Area during the time of the murders made him a compelling suspect. Still, no solid evidence was ever surfaced to confirm his involvement.
I feel like these suspects are just throwing names at a wall and hoping they stick at this point.
I mean, they were scrutinized. They needed to catch the guy.
At this point, when they get to these levels of suspects, you're like, okay, who have we not looked at? It's like, well, okay, man, you just... focusing on these guys because you actually think they're suspects, or you just don't like them and you hope you can get them for something?
Despite the intense scrutiny placed on these suspects, none were ever definitively tied to the Zodiac's crimes. Handwriting analysis, one of the primary tools used to eliminate suspects, was inconclusive for many, and fingerprint evidence found in the crime scenes did not match any of the suspects in the Zodiac's file. DNA testing conducted years later on saliva from the Zodiac's letters also failed to produce a definitive match. The Zodiac was careful, meticulous, and above all, patient. He seemed to relish the fact that he could remain one step ahead of the police, taunting them with each new letter and eluding capture. He chose his victims at random, left no clear evidence behind, and always maintained control over the investigation. The lack of a definitive suspect has only fueled the Zodiac's legend, and with each new book, film, and documentary, the debate over who the Zodiac really was continues. Was it Arthur Lee Allen, the troubled outcast with a penchant for violence? Was it Rick Marshall, the projectionist with a love for codes and symbols? Or was it Lawrence Kane, the unstable man with a history of predatory behavior? Or is it possible that the Zodiac killer was someone entirely unknown, figure who has slipped through the cracks and taken his secrets to the grave. In our next episode, we'll explore the aftermath of the Zodiac's crimes and the impact on his victims, the toll on law enforcement, and how modern technology might finally bring us closer to uncovering the identity of the ghost who walked among us. Now, let's go over some theories. Zodiac cases remained unsolved for over 50 years, not just because of a lack of evidence, but because of the enigma surrounding his identity and motivations. Who was this man who managed to evade capture while taunting the police and the public? Why did he choose the people that he did? What drove him to communicate through cryptic letters and ciphers, and why did he suddenly vanish? We're diving deep into the theories and speculation that have surrounded the Zodiac Killer, exploring everything from his potential motives to his true identity to whether he was responsible for more murders than he had been credited with. As we unravel these theories, we'll see that the case of the Zodiac is more than just a whodunit. It's a reflection of the limits of our understanding and the enduring allure of the unknown. Theory 1. One of the most widely accepted theories about the Zodiac is that he was a thrill seeker, someone who killed not out of hatred or personal vendettas, but for the sheer enjoyment of it. This theory is supported by his letters, where he described the pleasure he derived from killing. In his very first cipher, he wrote, "I like killing people because it's so much fun. It's more fun than killing wild game in the forest because man is the most dangerous animal of all." The Zodiac's words suggest a man who saw murder as a game, one where he was the hunter and everyone else was prey. His references to collecting slaves for the afterlife may have been part of a delusional fantasy, but they were also a hint at a twisted form of escapism. By killing and eluding capture, the Zodiac was able to assert his dominance over society, proving his superiority to those trying to catch him. Proponents of this theory argue that the Zodiac ciphers and letters were simply another layer of his thrill-seeking behavior. Each communication was like another notch in his belt, a way to relive the excitement of his crimes and keep the public and the police engaged in his game. But when the media attention began to wane and letters no longer garnered the same response, he may have lost interest, choosing to disappear rather than face the possibility of anticlimax or capture.
Mm-hmm.
I think of that theory.
It's not entirely without merit. I don't know. I kind of agree with, I find it very unlikely he may have just lost interest. I mean, usually the usual pattern of this, once they start, they don't usually stop until an outside force stops them. They die, they go to prison, or law enforcement captures them.
Here's my thoughts of why he stopped. So look at the time period.
70s.
We're sitting here in wartime.
Yeah.
So my thoughts, because even law enforcement at the time were being drafted. So because the draft didn't, back then you weren't excluded from the draft for being law enforcement and things like that.
When was the last letter posted? The last, like, known communication. It was 73 or 4.
It was 74.
It would not have been him. The Vietnam, according to what I just looked it up, the draft of the Vietnam War, they stopped drafting people on June 30th, 1973.
Yes, but he could have post-dated letters.
Because
you knew when you were getting drafted. So, and the war didn't end until 1975.
It's still a possibility, the likelihood does go down a bit.
I think he was drafted or volunteered. He didn't just, I mean, people were volunteering too. But I think that maybe he was law enforcement and then he still had that sense of duty.
Or.
And he ended up going to Vietnam and was killed in action.
Or maybe, and this might be a stretch, maybe he was already a Vietnam veteran. Because remember, he's talking about hunting in the sense of he already seems to have some knowledge of it. What if he already had experience hunting people? But he goes to Vietnam. Plenty of people have gone mad in combat of just, you know, the first killing another person, another living human being. You come back. Now, most are just kind of put the war behind them. But what if he didn't? And he just is like, oh, I got to keep going. And he decides to just start. He becomes the Zodiac. I mean, imagine this, going back to what I said before about him being exceptionally intelligent, but being in a position where you're not being utilized. We all know this. How oftentimes have we the sergeant or the officer is so stupid. Why don't they just put me in charge? I know more than that guy ever did.
I mean, he very well could have been a military cryptologist because we used cryptology heavily in Vietnam.
Yeah. And if he was a radio man, he would have been more likely involved in combat.
So, like a cryptographer, you know how many we used during Vietnam?
Oh, I'm sure a lot.
10,000 at the height. So, he could have been a cryptographer.
He could, and the first killing coincides with him coming back from maybe from Vietnam. He can't quite shake off the itch.
Vietnam started in 1961.
We didn't ramp up like.
But the height of it was like 68 ish, mm-hmm. which is when the killing started.
Comes back.
So he could have. I mean, he could have very well have come back and.
He still had the itch to kill. But this time he decides to. He kills the first group and then he waits. Nothing happens. And then he escalates and then he starts taunting them because. Because he's so much smarter. Because hey, he was smarter. He outwit Charlie. Yeah. Well, I guess he can outwit the Bay Area cops.
So another prominent theory is that the Zodiac Killer was a delusional psychopath, someone who killed due to deep-seated mental illness and a break from reality. His references to collecting slaves for an afterlife paradise suggest a belief system that is far removed from the norm. His casual descriptions of murder as fun and exciting point to a lack of empathy and remorse. The content of his letters, particularly his cryptic symbols and the random phrases he included, led some experts to theorize that the Zodiac may have suffered from schizophrenia or another form of delusional disorder. His communications were filled with contradictory statements, odd references, and non-sequiturs, which could indicate a disordered thought process. Psychologists who support this theory argue that the Zodiac's erratic behavior and the bizarre content of his ciphers fit the profile of a person with severe mental illness. The obsession with code, symbols, and wordplay combined with his desire for control and attention could have been manifestations of a disturbed mind. If this theory is correct, it could also explain why the Zodiac suddenly disappeared. It's possible that his mental state deteriorated to the point he could no longer function as the methodical killer he once was. He may have been institutionalized, committed suicide, or succumbed to a delusional episode that prevented him from continuing his campaign of terror. I don't believe that.
No.
I don't believe he had any kind of mental disorder. Too put together to do that.
Yeah. I mean, he was disturbed because he's, you know, going around killing people, but no, everything about the Zodiac strikes me as
he knew what he was doing.
He was in control. Control is the whole part of it.
Yeah.
The hunter stalking his prey.
One of the most controversial theories is that the Zodiac Killer may not have been a single individual at all. Some researchers believe that the murders attributed to the Zodiac were committed by multiple people, or that the Zodiac letters inspired copycat killers who committed murders under the guise of the Zodiac persona. This theory gained traction because of the varying nature of the Zodiac's attacks. For example, the shooting of Betty Lou Jensen and David Faraday on Lake Herman Road was very different in the method and execution from the stabbing of Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Shepherd at Lake Berryessa. The difference in the type of weapon used and the manner of attack led some to speculate the different killers might have been involved. Additionally, the sudden disappearance of the Zodiac could explain if he was, in fact, multiple people. Perhaps one of the killers was apprehended for an unrelated crime or died, leading to the abrupt end of the confirmed Zodiac attacks. Alternatively, if the Zodiac was a single individual, he may have inspired others to kill using his name and symbol to sow further confusion and fear. I don't believe that.
No. Because all the letters were theorized as being written by the same person, right?
Yes. Now, granted, that's kind of hard because some people believe that they were handwritten. Some people believe they were written with a typewriter.
I'd almost have to see the actual original letters to see what
it they is. They're in a museum somewhere. I believe they're in the serial killer museum.
Yeah.
Now, my theory. This is, obviously, this is a published theory, but this is the theory I believe in. Another theory that has persisted is that the Zodiac Killer may have had a background in law enforcement or have even been an active police officer. This theory suggests that the Zodiac's knowledge of police procedures, his ability to evade capture, and his apparent awareness of investigation details could indicate an inside connection. Supporters of this theory point to the fact that the Zodiac was never caught despite multiple close calls. For instance, during the Paul Stein murder, witnesses saw the Zodiac walking away from the crime scene, yet he managed to avoid capture even though officers were nearby. Some believe that the Zodiac's abilities to slip through the cracks may have been due to his knowledge of how law enforcement worked. Furthermore, the precise nature of his letters, his calm demeanor when interacting with the police, and his apparent confidence that he would never be caught all point to someone who may have been more than just an ordinary citizen. However, there's no concrete evidence to support this theory and it remains speculative at best. Now this is the other thing, the Paul Stein murder. So he's seen walking away, okay? And remember, the cops believe that at one point they may have talked to the Zodiac. What if they talked to the Zodiac because they recognized him because he was a cop?
Yeah.
He would not, the one, he would, if he was a cop, he would not have been in uniform.
No. But that doesn't mean anything.
No, you're right.
If he lives in the area, he's out for a walk.
But I would have,
He's out for a walk, and that's how he got away, because he's like, hey, guys, what's up, blah, 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 talking to them. And then they're just like, yeah, we're looking for this murder suspect. All right, I'll let you go.
You would imagine, though, the cops would have, even if they didn't think of it, at some point they would have noted, oh, yeah, I ran into Charlie when we were setting up the perimeter. Like, at some point, I don't know.
But if he lives there... But if he lives there, like I just said, they met him out for a walk. He lives in the area.
Or yeah, I think he could have just evaded them. He would have known how to evade, because again, everything's standardized. They all know how far off did they put a cordon, and he's able to
exactly
hide and avoid it or get it past it.
Another thing is, even if he, let's say, there's only one that they actually followed up, like got there pretty fast to talk to a suspect, and that was the Stein murder.
I think they would somewhere, if it was a cop, which he, again, I'm not saying it isn't. I tend to agree with Pam said before, it was probably not a Bay Area cop. Because again, if he's a Bay Area cop, there's a chance they recognize him, which even if it is nonchalantly, it's still going to be noted. Somebody's going to note that, hey, we had an off-duty officer in the nearby. Their detectives, everybody was looking at this. They were grasping at straws. They would have been like, hey, they would have, if it was a police officer, there would have been a follow-up of saying like, hey, we see that they found you when they were setting up the perimeter cordon, like trying the cordon to find him. What did you see? Because obviously he would have came.
How do we know they didn't do that? We don't.
When you were looking up this theory, did they ever?
They don't talk about that. We don't know that they did that, because, like, at this point in time, suspecting cops was not a thing. Cops did not suspect other cops. You, especially at this time, you would lie for each other, number one.
I don't think anybody would have lied for this.
I'm not saying that they knew that it was a cop. I'm just saying that they didn't suspect a cop, because why would they? Why would they think a cop would be a serial killer? There's been no history of that at this point. We have now. We've got cops that are killers now.
Yeah.
But at that point, there was none.
The Golden State Killer, wasn't he a police officer? He was a state trooper.
But at this point, none of that happened. So they had no reason to suspect a cop. So
I'm not.
It's the most, makes the most sense of how he's able to get away with everything. He can be involved in the investigation. At that point, they weren't going to, they had so much manpower on this that within each department, the files were wide open. It wasn't a, hey, this is only the detectives can look at this. No, they had all the manpower from all three jurisdictions, and then eventually the FBI and the DOJ trying to find this. So they are trying to share information to get it. So he could easily go look at the file and go, okay, they have this. Okay, now I need to change and go do this. And they would have no idea.
Yeah.
The FBI got involved in at the end, right?
Yes.
And that's when it stops, right?
Yes. I don't think he was a Fed.
I don't think he was a Fed. I think he was a local cop. He realized, oh shit, the feds are here. I'm going to stop.
No, what I think is, if we go with the law enforcement theory, and the reason he stops is because he, A, retired from law enforcement, which means that if he continues to do this, he has no inside anymore.
Yeah.
Which means he's going to get caught. And, or B, he moved jurisdictions because he got the job offer he wanted. He got a detective spot in another, whether another state or whatever, or he died. He could have died in line of duty. He could have just died. He wasn't old, because at the time of the killings, they said he was in his 20s to 30s. Yeah. So by the time the killings stop, that's a year. So he's still in his 30s. He's a prime of his life.
I mean, I'm personally of the opinion that I do not discount the law enforcement theory, because it does potentially answer some questions of like how an ordinary person was able to evade the police, considering that it's not premeditated in the sense of like he didn't scope these specific victims out. He just scoped out these locations out. Probably, but law enforcement does give him the theory of, you know, being able to evade the police.
I don't think he scoped the places out.
I don't think so either.
Well, at least he knew about them.
Well, of course he did. As a law enforcement officer, I would go to Lover's Lanes a lot.
Well, everyone does, because they're even
because if, I'm going to get you to stop having sex in public. It's illegal.
Well, in this case, also back then they were also known places to buy drugs.
So,
why I thought it might have been someone with the California, if it was like a California state cop, because he would be somebody who would be going to all over in that area. But I feel like, no, you know what? I don't know. The cop theory really does fit. But I just can't help but wonder has nobody ever just started checking personnel records of every police department and see who died around that thing?
It's not that easy back then. This is the 70s. It's all
paper. I'm talking about now, not back then.
I know, but I'm saying it was all paper.
Yeah.
And that's to say, what if Napa didn't have a fire or whatever? You know how much personnel files get lost from back then?
Oh, I'm sure.
It's not easy to keep. Nowadays, everything's on a record. We can just take somebody's fingerprint and boom, they're looked up. But back then, you couldn't do that. And when we changed to modern technology, we did not take all that old police stuff and put it in unless you were still with the department. So if he had left the department, he's not in the system. He's still on paper, which is why his fingerprints, now that they're doing fingerprints, his fingerprints wouldn't ping. Because now when you become a cop, you're fingerprinted. Fingerprints are put in the system.
They fingerprinted back then too, didn't they? I'm pretty sure.
But they weren't put in a system. They were physically, yeah, fingerprint cards. The way fingerprinting worked is they would take a suspect's fingerprint, they would take the fingerprint from the evidence, and they would sit there with a magnifying glass and look at the similarities. It would take hours. So they didn't. Why were they going to look at the cops? I guarantee you, if we went back and sat there and searched through all these files from California and we looked at the fingerprints now, I could almost guarantee you we would find a match. But I think that the some of the files have been lost. So the next theory is that the Zodiac was a family man. An unusual but intriguing theory is that the Zodiac could have been a seemingly normal family man, someone who led a double life, hiding his dark impulses from those closest to him. This theory is often proposed when discussing killers like Dennis Rader, the BTK killer, who we will discuss soon, who managed to evade capture for decades while living a seemingly typical suburban life. Proponents of this theory argue that the Zodiac's calculated behavior and careful planning suggest someone who was used to managing multiple identities. He may have had a job, a family, and a stable life, but underneath, he harbored a violent, sadistic nature. This could explain why he was able to disappear so completely. If his life circumstances changed, such as having children or moving to a new area, he may have decided to leave his murderous persona behind. This theory also fits with the psychological profile of a man who craved control. Zodiac could have viewed his killings as a secret indulgence, something that was entirely his and kept hidden from the rest of the world.
So, that's a good theory as well. But I think it might have been a cop who had a family.
Maybe. Maybe. I think he's too young. I don't think he would have had a family at this point. I think he did eventually, but I don't think at this point. While the Zodiac is officially credited with 5 murders and 2 attempted murders, he claimed to have killed 37 people in his letters. Investigators have debated for decades whether he was telling the truth or exaggerating his tally to instill more fear and confusion. Several unsolved murders in California and Nevada, and even as far away as New York, have been linked to the Zodiac by various researchers, but none have been conclusively proven to be his handiwork. Some of these murders share similarities in method or location, but many are based on speculation and loose connections. If the Zodiac was responsible for more murders than he'd been credited with, it complicates the narrative even further. It's possible that the Zodiac had been active long before the Lake Herman Road murders and continued killing long after he stopped sending letters. This theory suggests that the Zodiac was far more prolific and dangerous than anyone realized. I believe he had more kills.
I think he had more kills, but I don't know.
Now, the final and chilling theory is that the Zodiac killer is still alive and watching. If he was in his 20s or 30s during the time of the confirmed killings, he would be in his 80s or 90s today. While the passage of time makes this less likely, it's not possible. It's not impossible. Some believe that the Zodiac has been silently observing the public's obsession with him, content in the knowledge that he outsmarted everyone and got away with murder. He may have retired from his life of crime either because of his old age, illness, or simply because he felt he had achieved everything he set out to do. The Zodiac is still alive. He may be hiding in plain sight, living an unassuming life as a neighbor, a friend, or even a grandfather. This possibility, remote though it may be, is what keeps the hope of solving this case alive. In the end, the mystery of the Zodiac Killer remains because of the sheer complexity of his behavior and the contradictions in his actions. He was careful yet arrogant, meticulous yet erratic. He craved attention but was willing to disappear into the shadows. No single theory has ever been able to encompass the entirety of the Zodiac's persona. Was he a thrill seeker, a delusional psychopath, a calculating predator, or all of these things at once? The case of the Zodiac is a testament to the limits of profiling and the challenge of catching a truly unpredictable killer. As we conclude this episode, we're left with more questions than answers. In our next episode, we'll delve into the aftermath of the Zodiac's reign of terror, the impact on his victims and their families, and the evolving investigation that continues to this day. The story of the Zodiac killer is far from over, and perhaps it never will be. So, with that being said, Zodiac, if you are still alive and you are monitoring, and I am right about you being law enforcement, please send me a letter. You can send us an email, and I will send you my personal address.
No, we will not.
What is wrong with you?
And you can send us a letter. Dude, at this point, he's 90. He's not killing anybody. I'm slitting his throat. And then I will be the one. I will literally cut his head off and hold it up like I killed the fucking Zodiac. So, if you're still alive, you're not as good as you think. I'm smarter than you. God. So please.
This is worse when you reached out to the cult.
Send me a letter. Hey, they answered. So maybe this will work too. So, send me a letter. I guarantee you I can figure out who you are. But, with that...
let's not taunt serial killers, please.
That
please.
Concludes episode 2.
Or cults.
Well, I mean, I'm gonna taunt the fucking Scientologists.
Oh, God.
We want to thank you for visiting the Scarlet Tavern. Please remember to turn in your glasses, push in your seat, and as always, tip the bard. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Bye.